Hello everyone, it's Tom here. For day 23 of our pre-season countdown, I've picked one of the most influential engineers to grace Formula One, Neil Oatley. A race engineer at Williams in the late 1970s, Neil played a huge role in the team's first Grand Prix victory and subsequent World Championships. Legendary status was then confirmed during his spell as McLaren's chief designer. Ayrton Senna, Alain Prost and Mika Hakkinen all won titles in cars designed by Oatley from 1989 to 1999. When we caught up in 2023, Neil told me what it was like to have a front row seat for Prost and Senna's fierce rivalry as teammates.
I'd worked with Alan the previous year on the MP4-3, and literally the first time I ever met Alan was actually for the Brazilian Grand Prix that year. The flight was delayed going out there, so we didn't arrive until Thursday night. So the first time I met him was actually
almost
just before P1. anyway, just going on the side, but Alan was very focused on making a good racing car rather than a good qualifying car. So everyone likes to be on pole position, but that wasn't so important to him. And he was just focused on getting a good race car. I mean, it's very interesting that in that first year, the whole team was very much focused on Alan.
And in 87,
right? 87, yeah. When Ayrton arrived in 88, you can notice a big shift, and then suddenly it was just me plugged into to Alan. So there was the team had always decided, I think, where their future lay as early as that.
How early in that 88 season did you realise you had a rocket ship?
The first run the car did on the track, I think I was at Imola with the MP4-3, but which we converted to run Honda engines. So we'd been doing 2 or 3 days with both Ayrton and Alan, and the MP4-4 was very late getting finished, and it literally arrived the night before the last day of the test. So it only had one day's testing before we went to Brazil. But the first installation lap and then the first proper run, it was probably at least the second half quicker than the old car had been. It may have been 2 seconds. So it was just instantly, it was just so much faster than the old car.
Who drove it first?
Alan. And then, yeah, there was a bit of argument about who. I think Alan was convinced that he should focus on that car the whole day and Ayrton just drive it in Brazil. But anyway, they did half a day each.
And it was a rocket ship from that moment. Can you remember what Prost's first words to you were when he got back to the pits?
I think it was something like, oh, we can win the championship in this car, no problem.
Did he really say that?
Yeah.
Wow. And then what is it like to ride that crest of a wave where you go into every weekend knowing that you should win that Grand Prix, one of you?
Yeah, I think as I mentioned earlier, you're in a race, you're always worried about breaking down when you're in a really fairly invulnerable position. It's that's the only concern. But I think we're lucky both that year and the year after we knew one of our two drivers was certainly going to win the world championship. So that created a sort of different dynamic than it would have been if we'd been in a big fight with other teams as well. So things evolved quite differently, I think.
You've been involved in so many championship battles over the years. What's harder for a team, an intra-team battle between your two drivers or an inter-team battle where one of your guys is fighting someone from another team?
Well, I'd say definitely fighting another team because it's your responsibility to make a vehicle that's capable of beating the opposition. And the two drivers' setups rarely deviated from one another because it was basically fear, I think, that they would, if they took a different direction on setup and actually made it worse, then the other guy would get an advantage. So we were just tweaking little things on setup. It wasn't any big changes. And all they were doing was looking across the garage at what the other guy was doing. So it was very different.
You said a minute ago that Prost was more interested in having a good car for the race. But I did want to ask you about Portugal 88, where he was mighty, mighty in qualifying. And tell me if I'm wrong, but I think he got changed into his jeans mid-qualifying and then stood on the pit wall just to annoy Senna. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. Yeah, he was phenomenally quick. And literally, I think half an hour into the session, he went off to the truck, got changed into his civvies and just leant on the pit wall looking into Ayrton's garage. And
Beat that, which of course he didn't. But how good was that lap? Why was Prost so mighty that day?
On his day, Alan could be very, very quick, but I think also Ayrton had a slight problem with his engine settings, so there may have been a slight detriment to the performance of Ayrton's car, which helped that because there was a reasonable difference in Jerez as well, but nothing like as it was in Portugal. Yeah, and I think he just wanted to sort of touch his nose against Ayrton.
Early in the race, Senna veers towards the pit wall with Prost on his right-hand side, almost putting Alain into the wall. Was that the first time you saw anything particularly aggressive between those two?
Yeah, I think it was, to be honest. It may have been partly as a result of what Alain did on the previous afternoon, to be honest. And yeah, I think it had been pretty amicable, yeah, up to that point. And then that did create a little bit of tension, which obviously then bubbled over 6 months later in Imola again.
Do you think that was the first time it got awkward? And that
I think so, yeah.
Okay. And was Ron good at dealing with those two in those situations?
He was. I think that was a major part of his working day, was pacifying them, keeping them both happy and performing well. It's something he sheltered the rest of the team from very well, in fact, and so we weren't really that bothered. But obviously it did get a little bit more tense in 89, and I think from him onwards, the drivers just didn't speak to each other.
So how did it work in the debriefs?
Slightly weirdly. I mean, we'd be sitting around the table like we are now, all of us. Both drivers, myself, Steve and Gordon and Tim Wright. But the drivers would never speak to each other. If Alain wanted to know something about Ayrton's car, he'd ask Steve. And if Ayrton wanted to know something, he'd ask me and not Alain. So it's a slightly strange situation, but not really any animosity evident in that situation.
And incredibly secretive, not wanting to give away anything about performance to the other one.
No, it was actually fairly open. I think, as I mentioned earlier, the setups didn't really vary very much because they only really had to worry about the guy on the other side of the table. So, yeah, it was fairly open and there wasn't really anything underhand.
Do you think Prost accepted that Senna was quicker than him over one lap?
Never asked him that question, but I think my gut feeling is yes, but it didn't really bother him. And obviously they were half a generation apart, so Alain had done his bit and was a lot further in his career. And Ayrton wanted to prove that he was the fastest driver ever, probably. But it's not something that really played on Alain's mind, I don't think.
How much did Senna winning that title in 88 play on Prost's mind?
I wasn't actually at those last couple of races in 88 because I was working on the race car for the following year, so the immediate aftermath of it, I'm not sure. On balance, over the whole of 88, Ayrton probably did have the upper hand over Alain. He obviously had a couple of reliability problems, which cost him perhaps more than Alain lost through failures. And in the race in 88, Alain had a problem with his gearbox, so he was struggling a little bit, and Ayrton was obviously on top form that day, as he normally was.
What fascinating insight into the dynamic between Prost and Senna during their time at McLaren. Their rivalry was one of the most intense in Formula One history, even when they weren't on the same team. So to experience that firsthand, as Neil did, must have been enthralling. Well, join me again tomorrow for a full episode from the Beyond the Grid archives with a man who masterminded a miracle 15 years ago.
Formula One is the greatest sport in the world.
But there can be a lot to understand. Don't worry, we're here to help.
I'm Katie Osborne. This is Christian Hugill.
And welcome to F1 Explains.
This is the official F1 podcast about how the sport really works. The drivers, the cars, the rules, the words, the risk takers, late breakers, and history makers that amaze and inspire us every race weekend.
Hit like, follow, or subscribe for new episodes every Friday as we answer your questions about F1 with the help of some very special guests. Oscar Piastri, welcome for your debut on F1 Explains.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Double world champion Mika Häkkinen, welcome to F1 Explains.
That they could make up. What are you doing, man? What are you doing?
And by your side, a woman whose race strategy once made Sergio Perez cry.
I'm speechless, guys.
It's important for me to say tears of joy. Welcome back, Bernie Collins.
Thank you so much. You've just not heard the crying ones from losing the race.
Susie Wolf joining us here on F1 Explains. What a joy to have you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining me, Christian Hugill and Katie Osborne on the stage is Formula One legend David Coulthard.
We'll be here across the 2024 season with current drivers and legends of the sport.
Plus, insights and explanations from people you don't usually get to hear from, the unseen experts who are essential to Formula One.
We need your question to put to our experts.
Are you F1 Explains?
We are.
I love your podcast.
Love F1 Explains. Christian Hugill.
Oh my God.
And Katie Osborne.
Katie Osborne.
Record it as a voice note on your phone, or you can write it in an email and send it to F1Explains@F1.com.
Just search for F1 Explains wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll speak to you soon.